Blog Talk Radio.
The goal, of course, is to be like you, Daywalker. You got the best of both worlds. All our strengths, none of our weaknesses.
But maybe I don't see it that way.
Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane!
No, it's Max, Darryl, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
I never get tired of that applause. Good evening / good afternoon, folks. Another edition, another double duty, double mint gum example of podcast radio, courtesy of the Comic Shop. This one, of course, is the Comic Shop is presented by Afternoon Radio. Excuse me. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. I could not do the show, certainly not to this efficacy, not to this degree, without my partners in White Collar Crime, my podcast Avengers. First up, let's go to the captain. We need to beam you up, Captain. What's up?
Arrived. I'm here. A little late, but I'm here. Let's go.
I'm back in. I think Dee's mic is off.
Yeah, it seems so.
I'm here. Oh, there you are. Hey,
well, we didn't hear you.
Hey, we didn't hear you, man.
Okay, did you hear me any of that?
We hear anything. We didn't hear
we
anything.
We just heard any of that. That's what I just heard.
Wow. Okay, folks. These things happen. Welcome to the Comic Shop, as presented by Afternoon Radio. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. My apologies for the inappropriate, incorrect intro. Nevertheless, the show must go on. We got about an hour. And then, of course, the following hour, batting second is Afternoon Radio at 7 p.m. Gentlemen, let's just get into it. Darryl, you mentioned something from last week that I didn't get a chance to check out until recently. The infamous Ultimate Spider-Man episode that was an homage to the late, great Dwayne McDuffie. Tell us about it a little bit.
Essentially what it is Peter and the gang are fighting the Wrecking Crew and leaving a lot of damage in their wake. So Nick Fury decides, you know what, you're going to see the repercussions of your superhero battles from the other side. So he signs up the team to work with Damage Control. Folks, Damage Control was created by Dwayne McDuffie in comic book form. He created it as a business that cleans up after superhero battles. So it was a lot of old age versus new age thinking when it came to the battles, like Spidey. I'm a superhero. I don't clean up after myself. Da, 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 that's other people's jobs, you know. And all the same while, he wants to try to figure out what the Wrecking Crew's plan was. You know, he's still thinking about the mission. Meanwhile, he has cleanup duty. This was highlighted by the boss of Damage Control looking an awful lot and sounding very much like the late Dwayne McDuffie. Which made this, and you guys know how much I really dislike this Ultimate version, all right? Even though it has Iron Fist and Power Man and White Tiger, how much I dislike this one, you know. But they really, I got to give them props. They really did the homage to McDuffie here really great. And I would suggest everybody see it.
Yeah, it was an important thing. I like you. I'm not too keen on this version of Spider-Man. I was hoping that it was really going to tie in to what we've been reading for the last decade from Bendis. And it's just it's a way to sell toys. It's very kid-centric. I mean, I understand you have to bring kids in. But sometimes if you stay close to the cuff with these properties, you will still get kids in. Matter of fact, you'll be able to appeal to an entire audience. And when you pander to kids, you know, it's a little bit disingenuous. But this particular issue, I'm sorry, this particular episode, one of the main characters, Mac, just so happened to have the likeness of Dwayne McDuffie, which I thought was cool. And it was an important episode. Now, Captain, I sent this to you. Did you get a chance to check it out? Oh, I didn't send it to you. I forgot. I meant to send it to you. You are vaguely aware of this, though, right?
I'm vaguely aware, but I didn't get to see the particular episode. You know?
Well,
so that being said, I will hold my comments to a future date.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. Actually, we have a caller. Let's just open up the lines as well. Again, folks, the caller number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Let's open up the lines. Join in on the fun, the discourse. Caller, welcome to the comic shop. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from, 219.
Hey, guys, it's Chad. Joining you guys again on Sunday. How you guys doing?
Hey, pretty good, man. Good to hear from you. Good to join the crew. Talking about all things pulp, pop, comic book, fantasy, sci-fi, you name it. Did you get a chance to check out this episode of The Ultimate Spider-Man?
Yeah, actually, I did. And, you know, I got to agree with some of the earlier comments. I thought it was really cool. I thought it was a nice tribute to Dwayne McDuffie. I thought... you know, I thought it was a nice send-off. I was unaware that he was, you know, the guy behind Damage Control. I just thought that they were just, you know, paying him a little respect. But I thought it was great. I mean, I know, I agree. I'm not too crazy about the show. I think it's a lot like the Marvel superheroes for kids. It's just a way to kind of, you know, sell toys and reach a younger audience. But I thought it was cool. I thought it was a nice piece of work.
And the problem I have with this is what the way Marvel's doing it, they did a better job with Spidey in Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes instead of in his own thing. And the problem is they get rid of Earth's Mightiest Heroes to make it more like Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, you know, and he was really good on that show. I totally agree. It was a good episode.
It boggles the mind sometimes the way Marvel thinks about these things.
Well, that's why it's important, I thought, that for this hour. We're going to get into a lot of other topics, of course, but I want to kind of go through Dwayne McDuffie and kind of revisit his work because, first of all, we were fortunate enough to interview Mr. McDuffie about 2 years ago, so I would definitely implore our audience to go to the archives and check it out. It was an excellent interview, very comfortable with us. And this guy was a highly learned man. You know, for someone to end up in comics – based on his degree, I mean, this guy had a master's degree in physics, has a BA, had a BA in English from the University of Michigan. So, and then he ended up going to the New York University's Tisch School of the Arts. But this guy, you know, he did not have to, you know, be a comic book guy. He ended up initially being a copy editor for a business magazine, and then he ended up doing what he really wanted to do. I believe Jim Lee was on his way to studying medicine, but he wanted to draw men in tights. So, and I mean, comically, you end up doing what you really want to do. But this guy was really behind a lot of things. The heart of the Justice League and the Justice League Unlimited has a lot to do with Dwayne McDuffie's influence. He was the founder, of course, of Milestone Comics in the early 90s, where he tried to really put a black/multiracial imprint spin on comic books. So Milestone Media was very important. Static Shock, Ben 10, which is on to this day, was by and large, he was behind that. So he was a big guy. And also, and Daryl knows this, this is why I was really, really especially hurt when this man passed on at a relatively young age, no less. because he was one of the few folks that was out here really fighting for respectful, equal time, equal representation for characters of color in the comic book fantasy universe. So I don't know to this day who has picked up his baton, but when you start to really see what's going on now, you miss McDuffie more so than ever. Any thoughts, Aaron?
To that fact, you know, hey, Marvel, when is that damage control collecting going to happen? You know, just to hit you with that. You gave me all of his Fantastic Four run finally. That's great. Send damage control our way for something a little bit more offbeat, you know, send that down. But that's the problem. You're seeing it. I brought up in the blog, which Afro Nerd will post in a couple of days, Liefeld leaving DC and the tweets he made about their command structure. You know, I gave you guys before about George Perez and the problems he had with how DC's editorial is doing. Mark Waid, I put this in the blog coming up too, about how he's talking about the grimness and grittiness of comics. This is all stuff that we talked with McDuffie about, and McDuffie go like, yo, there's a point where the comic book fan and the business clashes. And many times, if you are not an established hero, an established writer, established artist, you're going to be just thrown off the wayside. Think about it. Zombie. Zombie was very critically acclaimed, very popular. I recommended it on this show for people to go and grab it. And what does DC do? They cancel it. Why? If you got critical acclaim, should you be boosting the book? No, they never tried it. Why? It's an undead Asian weed. You know, the new Adam, Ryan Choi, we don't even have to go over this one. We all liked the Professor Ray, the original Adam, or the second Adam, you know.
Ray Palmer, right.
Yeah,
Ray Palmer, right.
We all liked them. But the thing was, after the whole mess with Identity Crisis and stuff, you give it to Ryan Choi, this kid. And this kid endeared himself to all of us, only to be maimed and killed in probably in one of the worst ways possible for a hero. And DC chose to, we'll make this big page news. We're killing this character. Why? It served no purpose. Story-wise, lineage-wise, what? And these are the type of actions that Dwayne McDuffie would make his voice heard. And you would hear him about it. And it wasn't just race. I think it was more respect. Respect. Respect for the fans. Not respect for the business. Not respect for the comics. But you could kill characters. You could mistreat characters as long as it helped the story. And that's what McDuffie said. Enough of the publicity grabs and everything. You got to get back to the core of the matter. It's the story. And too many writers just didn't know, A, how to write certain characters, B, fell into stereotypes, C, sexist, racist, you name it. McDuffie would be in the forefront. And right now, who do I see with that baton? You know, Mark Waid is always there, all right? You got Gail Simone is always there. But the problem is, he was, for the black community in terms of comic books, he was the shining star. And there's nobody right now to take that place.
One quick thing, again, to our audience, you're listening to The Comic Shop. I saw there were some callers coming through. They dropped off. We will pick up your call eventually. Sometimes we get into heavy discourse, so don't be scared. Feel free to give us a call at 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Talk about the late, great Dwayne McDuffie. One quick thing I want to ask you also, Daryl, something that I did not know about, but it was, I guess, heavily touted as one of those urban legends that I guess was perceived to be tongue-in-cheek, but I don't know how tongue-in-cheek it really was this proposal that he submitted to Marvel in the late 80s when he was even a much younger man called Teenage Negro Ninja Thrashers. Let me repeat that. Teenage Negro Ninja Thrashers. Now, you know, obviously that's a play on the Ninja Turtles phenomenon, but it's a play,
and
on a Night lot,
Thrasher
lot of
from the New Warriors.
Exactly. But I thought the thought was pretty funny about this thing. Well, first of all, shout out to Shadow and Act, our friend Sergio Mims, who's not really a comic book guy, but he did, I think a year ago, he did post the actual proposal. I think there's a number of sites that actually have access to the written proposal that McDuffie provided. And, you know, when you read through, it's pretty funny, but it dovetails over what you were talking about, Darryl, about this whole notion of stereotyping. And he noted in a funny way, but I guess, you know, it was true, that when it came down to giving the characters of color powers, they were always on some kind of skateboard. It was like a skateboard thing. So he went into this thing, like, just I'm just looking at this now, like one of his proposals, again, Teenage Negro Ninja Thrashers, Rocket Racer, a black guy on a skateboard, Night Thrasher, a black guy on a skateboard, Dark Wheelie, a black guy on a skateboard. I mean, he goes into this whole thing of this over-the-top minstrel proposal to prove a point. And I think at that point, believe it or not, this parodied slash humorous proposal, it carried some weight with Marvel. I think they had to change some things around based on what this young man did as an editor in 89. Now, what were you going to say on this, Darryl?
I was going to say that the thing is, and it kind of proves my point, is that McDuffie was able to he was comics' version of Chris Rock. He will tell you the truth, make it humorous, but after you read it or after you listen to him, you have to sit down there and ponder. Wait. He just said that. Hold on. I don't think that was really all a joke. Wait, hold on a second. I remember seeing the original proposal in like 92, 93, all right, because McDuffie was one of the first guys on the net, all right, just to let you guys know. He was one of the first creators to have his own site on the net where he would put his own thoughts up. And he put the proposal up, and I read it, and then I just did what you did. Okay, black guys with skateboards, and I went through it like, yeah, why? I don't see many black guys in my community skateboarding, but everyone in the comic has a skateboard, huh? Well, okay, they're all angry black youths. they all have an axe to grind, and as further proof of where McDuffie was coming from. You're seeing now in multimedia, they're doing this Lawless movie. They're hyping it to the next. They're trying to make bootleggers into heroes in a Lawless town. And you know audiences are going to eat this up. Change the dynamic of that to today and make it drug dealers trying to help out a Lawless town. I don't think you would get the public hyped up for that, don't you think? You know, but these are the dynamics that McDuffie played with. And McDuffie was the guy, he was big in stature, soft voice, but when he said something, you had to listen. You had to hear.
Yeah, on that note, I want to take a quick musical break. Darryl, when we get back, I want to mention one more thing about Dwayne McDuffie. Then I want to move along to this notion of Superman and Wonder Woman sitting in a tree. So I want to talk about that. I'm not sure how I feel about it. This is actually, you know what? I'm going to go back, way back. This is Super Rhymes. I'm going to give a few minutes of Super Rhymes because Super Rhymes is like a 14-minute song for obvious reasons. So I'm going to have to pull out the phaser, ladies and gentlemen. But I want you to hear Super Rhymes by Jimmy Spicer. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove. Hold on.
Rhymes faster than a speeding bullet, has more rhymes than a train has tracks, able to reach sucker MCs in a single rhyme. Look at the jam of the mic, it's a bird,
it's a plane.
No, I'm super rhyme.
shiv on a swing while our CMG's rap. Doing our thing, it's not singing like it used to be. No, it's rapping to the rhythm of the Zhuzhai beat. It goes one for the money, two for the show. You got my beat, now here I go. You see this DJ, he gets down, mixing rockies while he go around with a hit of the hop. You just don't stop. You rock to the beat till it makes you drop. Yes, I'm one of a kind. I'm Super Rhymes and I'd like to say hello. And since I'm on the mic and I'm ready to rock, oh, this is how it goes. Yes, I rock so good, I rock so well. I'll ring ding dang, a ding ding a dang, baby, I'll ring your bell. Yes, I'm Super Rhymes, I'm 22. I wanna be 100 before I'm through, because no, I didn't come from the planet Earth. Planet Rhyme on is my place of birth. From the day I came out my mother's womb, I found myself in the operating room. Then the doctor spanked me on my behind. I didn't cry, the kid started to rhyme. My mother said, son, that's the way it should be. Your name is Super Rhymes, you'll be an MC. So then my father put me on a meteorite, sent me to Earth to rock the mic. I got to Earth and started laying it down. That's a jam on the mic I could be found while I was at the jam. Oh, this one time, I rockin' to the beat, said I'm feeling fine. Just a freaking out on the freak behind. I looked in the face of Frankenstein. I said, hello, no, she's not mine, because my woman is fine as wine. And she goes by the name of the lowest liner, but she didn't come here with me this time. I'm feeling real sad, but not that bad. I'ma have to run away from this pro dad. I ran to the DJ to rock the mic. He said, a Super Rhymes, take it, or do what you like. So I rocked the party viciously. This guy I didn't know walked up to me, but the closer he got, the more I could tell it was the man they call Coward Hosel, the guy you see on KBC while Joe Frazier boxed Muhammad Ali. He said, excuse me, sir, are you Super Rhymes? The one with the fine woman, Lois Lime? I said, I am. Will I be on TV like the float, like a butterfly stinging Ali? He said, yes, my man, if you show me you can. I was told you had the master plan, so I rocked the mic for Howard Cosell to show America how I rock so well. And while I rocked the mic, this is what I said about Dracula, the living dead. He didn't like blood, not this vampire. The disco beat was his desire. Transylvania's way he made home, until one day he decided to roam. And then out of the crypt, he did crawl. A Count Dracula is what he's called. He said, the sun's gone down and now it's night. I'm going to spread my wings and take a serious flight. I turned into a buck, I flew away. I said that the disco is where I gotta stay, because back home there was nothing like this. And Transylvania, this is what I'd miss. They just bite necks and suck blood all day when I...
All right, a blast from the past, Super Rhymes, Super Rhymes, the Jimmy Spicer, legendary rapper and rap writer, actually, ghostwriter, Jimmy Spicer. Listening to that song, that song's about 30-plus years old. It sounds like Miles Davis of rap compared to current rap artists. I'm just saying, it comes off that way. I see our friend Chad dropped off. Chad, if you want to come on in, I was having you in as a friend, so if you want to come back in, the water is warm. And as well as other folks joining in the conversation, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We're talking about the late, great Dwayne McDuffie. I would definitely implore our listenership to check out our archive with our interview with Dwayne McDuffie back in 2009. I would have had him back again. I would not have suspected that he would have passed on. So sometimes you really have to stay close to these folks because you just don't know. I see our friend from the Netherlands who's now a New York – I'm not sorry, New York. Pardon me. I think he's in D.C. now. Anyway, let me bring him in. Shazam!
Hey, guys. Hey.
What's up, man?
I'm good, man.
I want to mention one other thing. You know, we were talking about this proposal – that Dwayne McDuffie had as a tongue-in-cheek thing, but it really wasn't that tongue-in-cheek. Teenage Negro Ninja Thrashers. But you know something, Darryl, you know, you mentioned about not seeing too many kids now with skateboards.
Well, back
I think
then.
Back then. But the irony,
yes.
See, the irony now is that it would probably have a different context. I went to the Afropunk Festival in Brooklyn yesterday, and I'll talk about that more in the next show, the next hour. But, you know, they have a whole section of black, you know, black BMX guys, black skateboard guys. I mean, it might be cool in a hipster context today. Back then, not so cool. So he really did something, and you start to realize we're really missing something. And hopefully there'll be more people to take up the mantle from where Dwayne McDuffie left it. Now, I want to go forward. Gentlemen, I want to go to this whole deal
with the next Justice League book, I think Justice League number 12. We know it's been rebooted under this new DC 52 thing. And, you know, in a way, I'm looking forward to it in a way, but I thought that he might have hooked up with someone else, not Lois Lane, which is what he did, but not this time they're saying it's supposed to be Wonder Woman as his paramour. I don't know how long this is going to last, but I think it's supposed to last a little bit longer. We're talking about a new continuity. What are your thoughts about this team-up, this kind of obvious team-up? And I mean romantic team-up, that is.
Hey, it's been done in several Elseworlds, okay? I'm considering this whole DC 52 one big Elseworld, you know? You already got Lois Lane with another dude. You know what? I really don't have a problem with this. I really don't. Go right ahead and do it. If you've hooked Lois up with another person, it is only natural for an alpha male and alpha female to hook up. And, hey, Superman and Wonder Woman are the two alphas in this new 52. You know? So, hey, go right ahead. I mean, there is – let's put it this way. It's been rumored for so long, and they had that thousand-year thing before the universe switched over, you know. I'm kind of indifferent to it, you know. It's like, okay, you're hooking them up now. Okay, you know how to say the story? Because in the very first issue of the new Superman, you had Lois with another man. So it's not a story anymore. Hey, Clark Kent's got needs, too.
Well, not just that. I mean, just be honest, Daryl. I mean, that makes for good dramatic purposes, dramatic license. I mean, you just don't want them to, like, just hooked up. There's got to be – you've seen this in almost every idiom on TV. There's always a point where you think that two characters are going to hook up and then something blocks their way. So it's a device that's used quite a bit. This is going to be a lengthy device if we see – well, first of all, this is a new continuity. Does it have to be written that he has to hook up with Lois Lane?
Well,
I mean, I kind of appreciate that fact. I just think that Wonder Woman's just too obvious of a choice.
But that's why I don't see the controversy. If in the first book, the one he's supposed to hook up with is with another man, all right? We are not having a Superman return situation here. He is not going to super stalk Lois Lane. Screw that. Yo, he is Superman, all right? He can get any woman he wants. Let him get Wonder Woman. I don't care. And all, to all the Superman fans that have gone crazy on the net about this, oh, no, he's supposed to be with all this, they're like, yo, DC already screwed you. You don't have an argument anymore. They hooked Lois up with another guy. Simple put.
That could always change. I mean, this is the very beginning. We're accepting that this is the beginning of the whole Superman myth. This is a different mythos. You know, you're kind of mixing in the 70-year-old history. We have to pretend that didn't happen. So if this is a whole new thing, then why can't Lois Lane be, you know, with someone else? I mean, first of all, it took 60 years for Lois Lane to hook up with Superman in the first place.
But right there, you just made my point for me. You're starting fresh, all right? DC editorial mistakes notwithstanding, you're starting fresh in this universe. This is why it is stupid for Superman fans to be so freaking pissed off at this. It is one thing to have a marriage annulled by the devil, okay? And you know what I'm referring to with that, right? Because that treats all the fans that read all of the books like idiots that you did it like that, okay? But it's another thing. You're telling me this universe is starting fresh, okay? Lois Lane is with someone else? That's fine. You know what? Clark Kent, he's had a bunch of loves over the years that he had would have gone unrequited or whatever because he was with Lois. If Lois is out of the picture, you know what? Lana Lang's there. You know, Maxima is somewhere out there. You know, and here's Wonder Woman. And how many fanfics have you read over the years where they hooked up? How many?
Let's go to Steve for a moment. Steve, I want to get your opinion on this thing. Are you feeling this matchup? And also, do you think, because Darryl hinted at this, that this whole 52 thing is going to go by the wayside at some point? We're going to go back to the old continuity. Don't you feel this is going to be permanent? I mean, at least the continuity anyway.
I don't think it's going to be permanent because, I don't know, with DC it can be unpredictable. I'm surprised they didn't hook up Clark Kent with Betty Brandt. That would be interesting. I don't know. I'm not feeling it because I'm not a hardcore Superman fan, and the story with the current Superman books, apart from Action Comics, it's not that great. So I'm not really into it. Yeah. So, but I don't know. I'm not opposed to the idea. Maybe it's time, since it's another timeline or universe, I think they should change a bit. Maybe it could work. Maybe it could not work. They would just bring back. They would just return the things the way it was.
Well, I'll say this much. I want to bring the captain in on this one. But, you know, listen, we're in a different society somewhat, a different culture. And I think that the comic books, they're going to have to reflect this. And I'm thinking that, you know, with Archie, listen, I'm not an Archie guy. I am a collector as far as comics. You know, now I'm finding myself, because I collect comics, I will explore collecting old books that I really don't have an interest in. So I would collect like a 1940s Archie, although I'm not really an Archie collector. You know, an Archie collector as far as reading Archie, but I will collect it for value purposes. Anyway, Archie is dating Valerie from Josie and the Pussycats. So Archie was like the quintessential mainstream white comic book character is dating a black woman. We would never think you would see that in Riverdale for, you know, 50 years ago. So if we can acknowledge, I mean, he's not even really dating Betty and Veronica. He's dating the black chick, quote unquote. They're having gay marriages in Archie, in Marvel, and in DC. So maybe we have to accept in this new world that they're going to have, this is their appeal to what's going on. So Captain, you know, what are your thoughts on this union? How long will it last? And is it really more reflective of the time? They got to start doing things to mix things up.
None of the above. It's real simple. You have to think like an executive behind the counter. Real simple. You put Wonder Woman and Superman together, what happens? Wonder Woman has the anatomy. She can carry the baby of Superman. That's automatically a new comic, a whole new situation, and everyone's going crazy. And everyone will go get that comic book. You want to see what kind of power that this baby would have. That's what I would turn around and do. So you put this out there to shake up everything, shake up the universes, and you just check it out. That's real intriguing. What I said right there is real intriguing. Those two come together and they have a baby. What will happen? Wonder Woman definitely could carry Superman's baby. She won't be busted up by his super sperm. You understand? She has the anatomy for it. So it'll definitely work. Automatically, that's something you would want to see.
But they're engaged.
Doesn't matter. It can't happen.
Why not? It's bound to come up.
It's impossible. Lois could never have Superman's baby. Do you think her fallopian tubes could handle his sperm? I guarantee he blows a load like a shotgun right through her back. What about her womb? Do you think it's strong enough to carry his child?
Sure, why not?
He's an alien, for Christ's sake. His Kryptonian biological makeup is enhanced by Earth's yellow sun. Lois gets a tan, the kid could kick right through her stomach. Only someone like Wonder Woman has a strong enough uterus to carry his kid. The only way he could bang regular chicks is with a kryptonite condom. That would kill him.
I knew he was going to play that. I knew it. I knew it.
Well, there you
that was some, that was
baby.
that was the and great the, Kevin Smith's Mallrats, by the way, folks.
And the baby would be powerful than the both the two. You understand? So there you go. It's real simple. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Well, I don't know. Listen, we've seen this before. This is not like this stuff hasn't been explored before, and Darryl can attest to this, and he talked about this. They've had plenty of Elseworld comics, of alternate realities, going back to the 50s. So they've already explored this kind of thing. I think, if anything, if they were to explore this to its full capacity, full fruition, this kid is not going to have, like, the exact powers.
This is going to be more of a mutant kind of thing. I don't think it's going to be so simple that he's going to be super. And if we and we still don't know if Wonder Woman could carry this baby. We're talking about, you know, a quasi-godlike Wonder Woman, Earth-based, with a Kryptonian alien physiology. I don't know. I don't know if Wonder Woman even is even if her anatomy is human, a human anatomy.
She's kind of magic-based.
And Steve brings up a point that we haven't even considered. You're jumping all the way to baby and kid. I'm thinking he's now dating the one woman whose rogues gallery could really, really hurt Superman. Because Superman's vulnerable to two things. Kryptonite and magic. And what does Wonder Woman face on a regular basis? Gods. Not just any gods, Greek gods. And Greek gods are fair judges, or grudges. Greek gods that really have, at the height of hubris, Greek gods that have really quick tempers. So Superman, if this thing goes for a long time, Superman is going to face menaces that will truly challenge him. This may be the new 12 labors, pun intentional, mind you, 12 labors of Hercules. It's going to be the 12 labors of Superman if this comes to fruition. That's the one part of this that really interests me, okay? Because I was a Greek mythology nut growing up. You know, the original Clash of Titans, I still play that once every couple of months. You know, I love the old Greek myths. If you intertwine Superman with that, guaranteed he's going to get more challenges that you've never seen before. And isn't that what we've been wanting for Superman? Challenges to prove how super of a man he is that ain't the same run-of-the-mill challenges anymore. This is why when Superman fans got angry with this, and you guys have all seen the blogosphere and seen how, you're not thinking of it story-wise. This opens him up to an infinite amount of more challenges.
Okay, one quick thing to our audience. Again, folks, you're listening to The Comic Shop. We're at the midway point, actually beyond the midway point. Stay tuned for Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro-Nerd Radio at 7 p.m. That's going to be definitely a fiery show. Feel free to give us a buzz now. We are live discussing Superman and Wonder Woman sitting in a tree. DC is making this somewhat of a permanent continuity thing, starting in the next issue of Justice League number 12. The call-in number 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Now, I want to open up this a little bit before we go to the next topic, Darryl. I'm going to actually go around the horn on this. Don't you think, and maybe this is what would make this interesting if DC 52 is doing what I think they're doing. You know, this is 2012. This isn't 1970. This is not 1960 or 1950. So, you know, Superman has always had this perception problem. You know, we talk about this incessantly here at the Comic Shop about the current public's taste. The public's tastes are geared towards dark heroes, anti-heroes. Superman has always been perceived as this Boy Scout, and it's pretty much one of the reasons why he never really, at least not in the accepted continuity, he never really hooked up with Wonder Woman. Don't you think that there's going to have to be a tweak to many of the personalities in this world now, in this new 52? I mean, Aquaman is more of a roguish, kind of a hardened kind of guy now. Batman is always Batman. But hold on. Batman's always been Batman. We know that. Batman is the most Marvel-esque of DC. So doesn't it seem that Superman is going to have to go through a personality change where he's not pining over Lois Lane and he's not chaste? You know, he's always been somewhat of a chaste kind of guy. Now, if he's a real guy, he's going to hook up with a whole bunch of different women. Respectfully, he still has a code. But like, wouldn't it make sense for him to be, for the lack of a better word,
a regular guy that just dates. That just dates.
Okay, now you're falling into the trap yourself. New 52 is supposed to be a new start. So their personality stuff are not established yet. It's a new universe. It's a new history. Nothing saying that Superman has to follow how he was before the universe changed. This is what fans are not getting, okay? You can't have it both ways. Do not tell me this is a reboot and then expect to have the same characters again. Likewise, don't get mad when they're changing the history of the characters. The reason I get mad at this is it's obvious, but with the mess ups this thing has done, that the editors are not talking and coordinating their stories. All right? Because, again, Superman is one example, and we heard it from George Perez. You're telling me I'm doing Superman like this, but then you're letting Grant Morrison change this part of Superman right here, and now I have to go back and rewrite my story because he changed that, and no one's telling me. All right?
Well, hold on, Dara. I think you misunderstood me. What I said was, first of all, I welcome this change. What I said was, don't you think because it is a DC 52 that they're going to have to explore this different personality, that he can't
no.
be. Well, you're not. Wait. Hold on. You're not making yourself clear because you're saying that in order for this to work, there's going to have to be a personality change. I'm saying exactly that. That it would be a personality change, and for him to hook up with Wonder Woman, it would make sense in the sense that okay, he's a single guy, why not this thing happen this way?
Okay,
you know, like in other words, hold on, Dow. If he's a regular guy, regular guys date different women from the old continuity. Now I will admit, I was kind of used to his married life. They showed that he still maintained a normal married relationship with Lois Lane. Now we have to accept that's a different continuity, that's pre-52. Now in post-52, he's a single guy, he should have dated a number of women before he gets married, if he gets married.
Oh, okay, and again, you're not listening to me. What did I lead off by saying? If Lois Lane has a man, all right, then all Superman has a list of females that we've either met or we know of that has been in his history, like Lana Lang, like Lori Lamoris, like Maxima, like Wonder Woman, all right? He's had all of that. My thing is, you're talking personality change. His personality hasn't been set yet in this new thing. You're still thinking of him from the previous incarnation. I'm saying you are establishing the character now. So we're going to grow with the character. We are going to learn with the character. If we're learning with the character, then there's nothing that needs to be changed because it still hasn't been established yet. You're jumping ahead to marriage, to kids. No. Let him have a date first.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, Jarvis. Let's go to the captain. Let the captain say his piece. Captain, you wanted to say some words.
Well, let me interject, all right? When you're changing up a lot of these characters, what we have to realize is this. Yes, you want continuity of your story. You want it to flow really good. You want it to be a good read. But what we have to realize, not every character is really a good character. Some characters will be better than others. Like, I think Aquaman, regardless of whatever they did, made it a little better and everything. He's a whack character. That's just what it is. Batman is a fly character, highest level, zenith, highest apex, that they basically have, and a lot of people do feel that way. Superman, I really do not like, regardless of how you're going to change it up, whatever you're going to do, I'm not going to like Superman at the end of the day. That's just what it is. So no matter what they do, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. From my perspective, and also from a lot of people's perspective, not to put words in Steve's mouth, Steve said right there earlier, he doesn't really care for Superman. You understand? I'm pretty sure Steve cares for Batman. And no matter how we sprinkle Batman, we're always on top and we're flowing with Batman. So all of this going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, made great points. Yes, D. Burcher made great points. I don't think it really matters at the end of the day. It's whether or not you like the character and if when you read it, it has good continuity and it has a good read. That's when you're going to turn around and say, well, this was a good book at the end of the day. Back over to you, Sir Afflinerd.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, obviously, I'm not really that invested in Superman as well. I mean, I buy Superman, but his whole omnipotent thing, that's always going to be an issue. All these other characters have, you know, have great weaknesses, and them overcoming their weaknesses, or you know, that's what makes interesting storytelling. Superman is a difficult guy to make interesting. He's just too godlike. But I will say that if they're able, you know, the writing is everything. Everything is possible. They're able to bring this guy. I mean, there's elements of Superman I can understand with him being actually more human than Batman. That's for sure. Batman does not allow himself to be a human being. Superman does. So I think my only thing is if Superman was dating women and not being all like saving the world. But I agree with Darryl. They're not. There's so many different writers in the mix that no one knows what the other writer is doing. You know, with action has Superman as a younger 20-something, this blogger with an emo hairstyle. It's interesting. Now it's interesting, and he's got, you know, and even the costuming is interesting, but they go back and forth between this new high-tech costume and the work, you know, the blue-collar costume, which I actually like. The whole blue-collar, you know, almost Superboy type thing. You know, but they don't know where to go. They've got to get into a meeting and say, okay, listen, let's try to keep a cohesive storytelling, even in different Superman books. But I don't think they care. It's like just whatever. So I agree with Darryl on that. I just don't think Darryl understood what I'm saying. I don't know if it's about establishing a personality. I'm just saying him dating Wonder Woman is part of that. That's all. I don't want to go into this, but I'm just saying I don't think he understood what I'm saying.
He just keeps on going. But all I'm saying, no one was saying, new dynamic. There it goes. It's up to the writers and the editors to get there together.
And there's a good.
Where's my creature driven by rage, Captain?
I'm not even angry about that. When we get to the Spider-Man sidekick thing, then you'll see anger.
Well, we're all going to get angry on that one.
So
no, there's going to be a first. There's going to be a first. We might actually agree this time. Steve,
yeah.
Tell us your thoughts.
So does that mean
my rage?
Does that mean there's going to be a love triangle with Steve Trevor?
Wow, we totally forgot about Steve Trevor. Thank you, Steve.
We don't know. Based on what Daryl says, we don't know. We have to wait and see because we're jumping the gun.
Well, actually, the only time I read Wonder Woman, when Wonder Woman was interesting to me, was when her brother was tapping that. Did anyone remember that? That's what I was interested in.
There we go.
Because I remember one issue of Justice League, he was telling someone that he loves Wonder Woman, but didn't tell her.
Well, let's go back to the brother. There was an issue. Darryl remembers this. There was a guy that had dreadlocks that she was dating, and he even took her to the house with his grandma and the southern cooking and the whole thing. It was a whole thing.
And immediately DC just dropped the storyline. Didn't kill him. Didn't do anything. It forgot. 2 issues later, here was another iteration of Steve Trevor back. Hey, where's Dwayne McDuffie when we need him?
All right, listen. I'm going to forsake the musical break because I only got about 9 minutes remaining, and I want to get Daryl's ire up. He hinted at it. Let's go to the next topic. This deal with Spider-Man's 50th anniversary in conjunction with the 50th anniversary book, the bright minds of Marvel decide to give Spider-Man, who's been the quintessential loner, a sidekick called Alpha. What's the deal with this? Now, I read it. I don't know. I'm going to let Darryl get his piece on this. What are your thoughts on Alpha, Daryl?
Okay, Captain's already going to know. I think Captain's going to take the other side of this. But let me get this straight. Peter Parker does a machine with Reed Richards that has an easy turn on, easy turn off switch with no safety controls. No safety controls. Two guys who were got their powers through accidents of science create a machine that doesn't have an emergency safety shutoff switch. Then, so happy, you leave the door to the room open and allow a kid who's the combination of Flash Thompson meets the stupid Garfield Spider-Man meets the rich Spider-Man from the 90s Clone Wars episode. This kid, all wrapped up into one, the ultimate slacker, is able to turn it on and get shocked and get powers. Marvel, what are you smoking? Seriously, what are you smoking? And, hey, now Peter feels responsible because the kid got powers and he doesn't have a sense of responsibility, so I got to take him under my wing. If you wanted to be responsible, where was the damn safety switch? Cap, it's yours.
Wait. Why am I going to take the other side? The story is horrible and corny. It's real simple. We talk about writing all the time on this show. The writing is simple, very fourth grade, and the whole thing is corny. It's corny and cachet. We don't have to debate this. I'm right there riding with you. Let's go. You're the captain of the ship on this one. No problem. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
I thought we were past perhaps in comic shop history. One time, all of us are in unison on this thing. I read it, and I was like, this is sloppy, it's easy, it's pandering. This kid's the only thing that I will say that's interesting, the only thing, is this whole concept of Alpha and Omega power levels. That's the only thing. They open up a new door with that. We know that with the Omega power level, they put someone like the Hulk, at an Omega power level, that the more angry, we know the whole thing, the angrier he gets, his power set is commensurate with that. So his power set, we don't know what the Hulk's power set is. It's infinite. They kind of said the same thing with this kid, that he's the Alpha. So I like that, but even his powers are a little bit suspect.
He's Captain Universe.
It's sloppy. It is, and the fact that he's a known hero. Also, everyone knows he was already a nobody. He didn't belong into any kind of clique. Even if you're a nerd in high school, at least you have a nerd clique. This kid did not have a nerd clique, or a jock clique, or any kind of clique. You know, nothing.
He's a Columbine kid. That's what he is. He's a Columbine kid who now has become Stryker from Avengers Academy. There is nothing about this kid that's likable. Marvel may have just created their own Jason Todd with this one. And then when you consider all of the teams that have been in the Spidey universe that have gotten powers where Spidey could have mentored them, no, none of them. All the kids that are in the Future Foundation that Spidey mentors, no, none of them. I got a root for Flash Thompson with the Captain Universe powers. That's who Spidey's sidekick is. Give me a break.
What? Wait. I never saw it. He's not Flash Thompson. Flash Thompson was a jock. This kid was
his attitude.
Well, now it is. After the power. Listen, there was a part where Spider-Man went through a little bit of a cockiness with his power. I mean, you expect that. But this kid's power set is so above everybody. You know, it just doesn't make – and the fact that he's a known person, that's another thing. There's too many – I guess the main thing, we only got about 4 minutes, gentlemen, but is there any permanence with this thing?
No.
Is there going to be any permanence with this?
In 10 issues, he's fighting Spidey. And Spidey's like, I created him, I'm going to have to destroy him. I give him – Unless the new generation that loves Scott Pilgrim and stuff really loves this kid, He ain't rocked in more than two graphic novels before Spidey has to take him down.
I mean, listen, one thing, and I'm going to say this before we get out of here. One thing I will say, Spider-Man has been an excellent read for a number of years, but then he also fell off. It was a point maybe in the 90s, late 80s, up until recently, that he was the consummate loser. This guy, he's a young adult. He can't pay his rent. He's always borrowing money from Aunt May. I mean, at some point, it was a tired thing. This man is supposed to be, have an intellect. Now we finally see Spider-Man as an adult, and it took years, from the 60s to the 70s, Buscema period, before the clone fiasco, to me a fiasco anyway, the clone confusion and all that stuff after that. Spider-Man was pretty cool, the pain, his pain and all that, but it was a point where he was just too much of a loser. Now that he has some intellectual heft, now that he's an adult, now that he's an Avenger, he's back to being interesting to me now. But this right here with this thrown-in sidekick, it's poor storytelling. It's lazy, Marvel. I'm going to do one of Daryl's things, shouting out to Marvel personally. It's lazy, folks. It's lazy.
They had a chance to do like a sidekick thing with the two Spider Girls. The first one was Matty Franklin. They had a chance to use her, but they killed her off in Grim Hunt. And I don't know why they're not using the current Spider Girl as a sidekick. They did have their own ongoing series, which was great until near the end. It became sloppy. And they canceled the whole series, and I think that character deserves to be psychic and needs more attention than this other new character.
Well, listen, next week we got about 2 minutes remaining, so we're going to have to close the shot, Daryl. We're going to have to revisit this a little bit next week. We didn't get a chance to talk about DC's new Arab American Green Lantern.
With a gun. That's beautiful. Thank you, DC.
I'm not sure what to think. I think it's good that they're opening up the ethnicities. I think that is important. I'm not sure what to think about his costume. It's kind of a badass costume in a way, but I don't know where they're going to go with this. But I appreciate the fact that they're opening up the ethnic lines. That's important. All right, gentlemen, listen, we're going to revisit this going into next Sunday. Dow, as always, we appreciate it.
Chad,
we appreciate you coming through. And, of course, Steve, always welcome. We're going to go next door, folks, to After Radio. It's going to be a fiery show. Thanks again. We're going to be back in a few moments. Let's go on out.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
Anybody know who Willie Lynch was? Anybody? Raise your hand. No one? He was a vicious slave owner in the West Indies. The slave masters in the colony of Virginia were having trouble controlling their slaves, so they sent for Mr. Lynch to teach them his methods. The word lynching came from his last name. His methods were very simple, but they were diabolical. Keep the slave physically strong, but psychologically weak and dependent on the slave master. Keep the body, take the mind. I and every other professor on this campus are here to help you to find, take back, and keep your righteous mind. Because obviously you have lost it.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funky lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in the cosmos, where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. Welcome once again. Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro Nerd Radio. We are recording live. We are broadcasting live, I should say. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Folks, we have a lot to get into, a lot of stuff to throw out at you into the universe. First up, I do want to play some music, as we always do as our intro, to kind of brush off the dust. We receive a lot of musical submissions. Many of them are minstrel-based songs. Many of them are just the same old crap that commercial radio plays. This one time, I received a record that I really dig by Shanice, an artist by the name of Shanice, Revolution, Revolution. Let's get into it. Check it out. Something new. Let's groove.
I and I fight the hypocrisy. Babylon no shoot without apology. So we got to take a stand. I and I tired of this talking. No silencing. It takes a revolution to make a solution. I when me tell them said it takes a revolution to make a solution. Who wants to stop me? Block me. Watch how them a watch me. Red, black and green a patch me. A tire for the weak man spit fire. How long this empress die? See the wicked man retire. Implant trigger finger heavy hand. Remember Patrick Doris man. They don't know what they're facing. Eyes red cause we straight Mary Jane blazing. I said trust and I bow to the waving. Why then so many of us hesitation? Sean Bell, eh. Cause I know I say it's tough out there, rough out there, Jah know we need a solution. But the elders tell me, said them, said it takes a revolution. And a one or two man, I and I as a union. Give Babylon the boot and takes a revolution to make a solution. Who me a Jah for now? Well, Malcolm X and Steve Biko. Lioness a seek yo. Marcus Mosiah. Lioness not a ria. With no weak heart Maria. How are them there for? Babylon no feel it. Them turn around cause them know anity is strength. And then the lioness move legendary. Like Malcolm X said by any means necessary. Who no member went to Saint had the whole of Haiti locked down. Said tell Napoleon freedom I come with shotgun. Hey, I said it takes a revolution. Them never see the man I come, I know, I said it takes a revolution. He move and stand that it takes a revolution. Words without words have no words, it takes a revolution to make a solution. Hear me a talk about now, listen, we come from a great line of warriors and warrioresses. Kojo and Nani, Jamaica, Busta, Barbados, Kofi, Guyana, Beverly Jones, Trinidad, Joseph Chateau, St. Vincent, and even Yasta. There was once a man who spoke of.
All right, folks, once again, I had to pull out the phaser on that. That was an excellent groove by Shanice. Shanice, a submittal to me personally, to the show personally. Shanice, jams called Revolution. Definitely check with her. She's part of our rotating list, definitely. Folks, welcome to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. And speaking of the Captain, you're needed on the bridge. Let's get into it.
Let me begin. I'll be terse right here, right now. In lieu of the great Afro nerd attending the Afro Punk Festival, I must say this. Black people, you always look better in your Afrocentric look than with any other look. That's personally how I feel, and I think a lot of other people feel that way. Even with the corporate look. The corporate look is a self-imposed look upon us and everybody else. Even the white male is subject to the rules of that corporation that they work for. Okay? White male, you might have long hair. You have to cut your hair if you're going to work in a corporation. Now, that being said, this is something you must understand, that everything is a corporation. If you rap, the person that distributes your records is a corporation. If you play football professionally, that is a corporation. So either you work directly for a corporation or you work in conjunction with a corporation. Now, if Captain Kirk was able to travel back in time and make all the black people think from an Afrocentric point of view, first you would have knowledge of self, because it takes knowledge of self for you to carry on like that, and then you do for self. Then you have your own corporations. Then you can do your own look and what you want to do. With comes that Afrocentric look, you start to eat a bit differently. You exercise a little bit. And then you also think differently. So you get a different reaction to the public. Also to not only to the public, for yourself, for your peers that are directly around you, and your family. Something very important, something for you to think about. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd. Let's get it started.
Yes, folks. Again, words of wisdom from the captain. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. A lot to get into. The captain just referenced my going to the Afro-Punk Festival in Brooklyn yesterday. Actually, it's going on even as we are broadcasting in Brooklyn for day two. And I must confess, and I told the captain behind the scenes, that I was a little bit taken aback. Now, I'm always shouting out Afro-Punk, and I will continue to do that because, heck, we do emphasize urban alternative music here at Afternoon Radio. So they're part of our cipher. So it would make sense for me to at least go to one of their functions. So I did go to the Afro-Punk Festival. I believe Janelle Monáe, the great Janelle Monáe, is performing sometime this evening. And yesterday, the equally great Erykah Badu with Yacine Bey, a.k.a. Mos Def, they were on stage yesterday, and quite a few other artists. I think Cerebral Ballsy, was also in the house. Quite a few Afro-Punk folks, folksters, black folksters. It was just a cool place to go to, a cool environment. Commodore Park in Brooklyn, Fort Greene section / downtown Brooklyn / Brooklyn Naval Yard. And I will say, just dovetailing on what the captain said, it was – You would be taken aback by the beauty that I saw in black folk in their natural look. Looking at some of the women, many of the women, young women walking around in these, you know, natural hairstyles. And one might think I'm against natural hairstyles. I'm not. But the way they had that hookup, their bodies were on point, Captain, you know, not to get too salacious, but they were on point. They looked good, exotic. A lot of different women of different ethnicities were there. Everybody was there mixing it up. Quite a few Caucasian boyfriends with these Afro sisters with the tight bodies, folks. So, you know, it's a different world. It's a different world, different music, urban alternative. I was about it, to be honest with you. I really liked the vibe. It was different, and I would implore folks if they can check it out this evening if you're in the Brooklyn, NYC area. I'll talk more about my experience at Afro-Punk in a little bit. Anyway, I also want to shout out the great, late, great Neil Armstrong. historical figure, first man on the moon. During the summer, July of 1969, he had the world on edge. The world was concerned about space exploration. And it was a case of science fiction becoming science fact. Let me repeat that, science fiction becoming science fact. So his efforts are to be applauded, this great historical figure. And he died at the age of 82, from my understanding, from heart complications. So he was kind of in an ill state. But, you know, we're losing our greats, folks. We're losing our historical figures. So these things must be acknowledged. Also, Tony Scott passed on, I believe, at the age of 68, jumping off a bridge. You know, this was, Tony Scott as well as Ridley Scott. You're talking about sci-fi, pop culture, movie. Tony Scott was up there. Worked with Tom Cruise. As to why he committed suicide, we really do not know. I think the circumstances are still hazy at first. It was reported early that he had brain issues. Even mentioned 3 months to live, and now they're taking that back. Now we really don't know if it was a matter of a health concern. It looks like it might not have been. Certainly wasn't about money, because he was involved with the Numbers TV show, quite a few TV shows, quite a few movies, recent successes. He was a paid guy. So I don't know. You know, sometimes just depression, mental illness is a major thing. So these two men will be missed, Tony Scott and, of course, the great Neil Armstrong. All right, also something else, something with my alma mater. Now, you know, Captain, we've mentioned this issue before, maybe a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, with Susan Taylor, the CEO of Essence Magazine, the head of Essence Magazine. She was called upon to be a guest lecturer on Hampton's campus before the MBA school at Hampton. And she was accepted the invitation, then refused because of a policy that the Hampton MBA program specifically has geared towards their male student body with natural hair. Specifically, shouldn't say natural hair, but specifically the hairstyles, the dread hairstyles and or the braided look. They take issue with that. They have a ban on that. A lot to do with President Harvey, who is head of Hampton U. He's a conservative. He was the head of the school when I was there. He is to be applauded, to be honest with you. He's done a lot with Hampton, expanding that campus, expanding the breadth of the campus, all these different types of schools in Hampton. He's made Hampton a big deal. Hampton's always been a big deal, but it's a really big deal. He's brought a lot of money to Hampton. And personally, I don't really take issue with this policy. They're trying to teach these young men and women, but specifically men, if you're trying to get a job in corporate America, you need to tighten up that look. If you get your own position in your own job, you create your own business, you can do whatever you want to do. Heck, we've mentioned many times on this show that Mark Zuckerberg is considered a maverick, even though he's a white male. He's considered a maverick because he wears his hoodie. He wears his legendary trademarked hoodie before board meetings, even though he's a billionaire. But because he is a billionaire running his own business, he can do what he wants to do. I think Hampton is telling folks, until you get to that point, you're going to have to capitulate a little bit. You're going to have to capitulate a little bit. But there's folks that have issues with this policy. So it's in the news again. In the news again, stemming from, I believe, a current student at Hampton now, who I believe wears his hairstyle and dreads. Maybe he does. There's a picture of someone on The Root, theroot.com, folks. A dreaded male in a suit, business suit. And the article is essentially saying that, or essentially calling out Hampton for this policy. Now, I appeared as a caller on Coco Mode's show, the Coco Mode Show. Sean Renee is the host. And it was a bit of a feisty exchange. bit of a feisty exchange about this policy. I want to play the clip, Captain, for a moment, and then I want to open it up to the audience, open it up to your opinion on this thing. I think you gave us a hint at how you feel. But anyway, this is AfroNerd on the Kokomo Show conversing with Sean Renee. Hold on.
Because we've been fighting this for as long as I've been alive. Thank you so much for your call. Moving on now, AfroNerd, welcome.
Yes, good morning.
Hey.
I am a proud Hampton graduate.
All right, here we go.
Not so recent.
Okay.
I'm a Hampton
That's
grad.
That's okay.
I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go there, but
All
Hampton
right.
grad.
Go ahead.
Listen, honestly, this issue goes back a little bit.
Okay.
If you remember, Susan Taylor from Essence Magazine refused to show up. She was there for some kind of function on behalf of the MBA program, because it's a relatively new program, if I'm not mistaken, at Hampton.
Well, I'll tell you this. The ban began in 2001, so I don't know. I mean, it's been around at least that long.
Okay.
All right.
But I know that you can look this up. Maybe 2 or 3, maybe 4 years at the most, that Susan Taylor, she was offered to show up, and then she refused because of this ban. And if you've seen her hair, obviously you know why she had a problem with that issue. My thing is that Susan Taylor has her own business. She can afford to do that. But for these kids that are going in there, and it's specific to this particular to the MBA program. It's specific to them. My thing is you have to get there first. And I think that, the school is somewhat conservative. I agree with the program. When you get your own position, if anything, they should start. I think some schools are starting to actually promulgate this whole deal of having entrepreneurial-based classes as opposed to just getting the MBA. But if you're going to get your own thing, then you can do whatever you want to do. The Crips and the Bloods, believe it or not, have their own guidelines. Every organization has a guideline. But corporate America has guideline.
Well, wait a minute, you know what? This is what I don't understand. I personally know people in corporate America with dreadlocks, very successful people. So,
but don't you think that may be more anecdotal? I mean, heck, Morehouse, men want to wear dresses at Morehouse now.
Well, but you can't compare. Excuse me, you can't compare that. And see, I know, and I don't think you can compare this to what's going on with the Bloods and the Crips. Men wanting to wear dresses at Morehouse is something completely different than a black man saying, you know what, this is an expression of who I am. It's not. It has nothing to do with this is an expression of who I am as a black person. And you are at a HBCU. I want somebody to call me up from the University of Michigan or the University of Maryland or Harvard University and tell me if one of these white schools will tell a black student you cannot have dreadlocks in this MBA program, because I don't think you'll find that. And why won't you find that? Because it's discriminatory. That's why.
In a white corporate situation, I doubt you'd have some long-haired male working for IBM or some kind of financial institution. I mean, there's guidelines that everyone has to abide by. There's a corporate culture. The reason why I brought up
who's to say that this person just wants to work in a financial institution? MBAs aren't just about being at Wall Street. I mean, maybe this person wants to be the vice president of Xerox. Maybe this person, a person that I know, happens to be a salesperson for a huge media company. And, yes, he is the national sales manager for one of the largest media companies and has dreadlocks down his back, got his job when those were little nubs growing out of his head. You understand? And here's the thing. I respect him because he went, got his – okay, thank you, Daryl. He went, got his education, went in there, and impressed those people so much that they saw beyond those little knots out of his head, and he went in and did exactly what he was supposed to do. He set the groundwork for other young African-Americans coming in. See, here's the thing. If you go in with the understanding that you have to conform, you've already lost. And don't tell me that then you go in and change the system, because trust me, if that's the way people were thinking, by now the system would be changed.
Well,
thank you so much for your call.
All right. Captain, before I dig into this, because I don't want to we got other topics to get into. Tell me what you think.
Yeah, she sounded like she was rather emotional and rather angry. What's going on, man? It kind of looked like it would have went higher, you know, stronger if you were left on the air a bit longer. I think you sparked the nerve. Let me tell you my own experience. I've seen inside the corporate setting where the white male comes in. I've seen this. Comes in and he says, okay, here's the thing. All right, qualifications and everything else. You went to nice school and everything. But that hair there that you have coming down to your shoulders, you have to cut it. Now, if they're doing that to the white male, what are they going to press upon the black male? This is the reality of it. Corporate America has a culture, has a vibe, it has a spirit, has a way that they want to do things. Now, when we speak about Russell Simmons, Russell Simmons wore a hoodie, okay? He had Def Jam. That was his own startup. Zuckerberg, therefore with Facebook, he wears a hoodie. He had his own startup. He's doing exactly what you want to do. The point is, if I have a corporation and I do not want you coming in this way, dressing a certain way, saying that, you know, you cannot wear your hair this way or that way, is there something really wrong with doing that? I'm not saying that you can't be black. I'm not saying you can't be a white person. I'm not saying you can't be an Asian person. I'm saying that the corporation has a certain structure, has a certain culture. This is what we want. And even women, when they go to work, sometimes they tell you, look, or should I say, not just women, everybody. We all know about dress down day on Fridays, right? Monday through Thursday, you dress a certain way. Friday is a dress down day. But even that, they turn around and say, hey, whoa. You can't come in this institution with a tank top. You can't do that. Make sure you're showered and everything else. This is the qualifications for dressing down. So corporations have a certain culture. So I understand what they're doing. And when you check it out a lot of times, these individuals that you do see with the long dreads coming down to their back or what have you, they did not come in through the door like that. They didn't do it. It's after they moved up and they got power, and then everyone's like, oh, leave them alone, man. They're doing their thing. Look how much money they make for the corporation. Let them do whatever. That's how it goes. That's essentially how it goes. That's just what it is, sir. I could be totally wrong, but that's just what I've seen over the period of time.
Well, you know, listen, out of respect for Shauna Renee, you know, she accepted my call. She gave me a few minutes to talk my spiel. So I'm not going to be disrespectful toward her. She's entitled to run her ship, run her operations the way she sees fit. You know, it's an hour-long show. Maybe because of a personality thing. Maybe it's because of just her style. You know, I really don't get the sense where you can actually hash out these topics. On our show, we try to hash out and come up with an analysis of it. I felt that she had this one way kind of attitude about this thing, where she feels that this is just the way it is, and anyone who has a difference of opinion has to be shut down. You know, on occasion, listen, we have our agenda too here at Afro Nerd, but if someone comes up and says something that has some validity, I have to concede to it. So I will make concessions on things. I mean, that's just the way you give a little, you get a little. I thought that there's a certain reality that corporate America engenders, and if you're trying to, you know, if you're on the come up, if you're talking about students now, Hampton, and I attended Hampton. Hampton, and like many other HBCUs, they take on a more personal role with their students. They care. Even in the discussion when she talked about and I didn't get a chance to get into it, but I was going to give her a concession cap. I was going to concede something to her. When she talked about if Harvard or Michigan or any of these other schools, more than likely they probably would not tell a student this, that, and the other about their appearance. They would be more accepting of it. But because of the HBCU experience, where you're more of a name and not a number, they're not just taking your tuition. because they care, more than likely they're going to tell the student, listen, we're setting up this program to give you the highest chance to succeed. We're doing you a favor. We're giving you the understanding that in corporate America there are certain expectations. They really don't want black folks there anyway. They don't want you there. So you have to be, you're going to have to do the best you can do to be compatible. It's their business. You learn from these businesses, you work up the ladder of these businesses, or you learn from the business and you go off and do your own thing. Or if you do your own thing, you come back and say, hey, I'm making X amount of dollars, you have to accept me the way that I am, which is pretty much what Mark Zuckerberg represents and what Russell Simmons in the Kaffir's example represents. I even think of someone I've referenced before, Ryan Frelinghouse. Ryan Frelinghouse of West Coast Customs, this guy wears khakis, he wears Van sneakers, and he has tattoos. But his image and his car customization business is his brand. His image is his brand. So when he sets up deals, and he has, when he sets up deals with Best Buy and JCPenney and Ford, he walks into these boardrooms as is, because he's already a multinational, because he's got businesses, West Coast custom brands in other nations, not just the United States. He's international, and he brings in millions of dollars, so they have to accept you based on who you are. He has his own business, his own imprint, and he's able to, and he has power. But if you coming in as a powerless person, you want to run the show, and you want to come in with dreadlocks down to your buttocks, it's not going to happen. And there is a culture thing. They have a corporate culture that everyone, blacks, whites, Asians, Latinos, that they have to adapt to. So that's why I take issue with what she was saying. And when I was trying to make the connection with the Crips, even the most lowliest organizations are organizations, folks. They have their own mores and bylaws and guidelines, and they have a certain look that they require. So, and when I, and also, I'm going to go to a musical break, by the way. We're going to go beyond this. But, you know, again, we can hash this type of stuff out here at AfroNerd. I can't say that for other shows. But when I made the connection with the Crips and also with the gay black males at Morehouse had the Morehouse brand. And these gay males, love it or hate it, they want to be themselves too. She said, black men just want to be themselves and wear their hair the way that they want to. My analogy was, the captain and myself may not understand what these males want to do, but they will tell you they just want to be them. And being true to themselves enables them to wear a dress. They want to wear a dress as a Morehouse man on Morehouse's campus. They want to express themselves. So where does this stop? Where does this stop? Unfortunately, I thought, and the captain, before we do the break, I think I make sense. Don't I make sense? Am I talking completely like a lunatic? I mean, what did I say that was so difficult for her to understand?
Well, again, you just touched upon it. It's the one way or the highway. You know, we're over here, we're at AfroNerd Radio. We're about different lanes. She's entitled to her opinion. We're entitled to our opinion. And someone else might have a different opinion that's different from the first two. All that is okay here at AfroNerd Radio at the end of the day. So, you know, there you go.
We're going to go to a musical break. I'm a proud graduate of Hampton. I'm a proud graduate of St. John's. But my attendance at Hampton, I feel that President Harvey, the administrators over there, they have a right. They have a right to conduct their affairs. Hey, that's a business too. Hey, college is a business, folks, believe it or not. They have a right to put forward their bylaws, their rules, the way that they see fit. It's a private institution. Why can't they be conservative and promote conservative beliefs with this MBA program? Why is it a problem to have different types of black folk. Heck, I went to Afropunk yesterday. Nobody was conservative there. Trust me. Nobody was conservative there. So why can't Afropunk in that lane be Afropunk? Why can't Hampton be conservative in that lane? All right, folks, enough of that. We have more to talk about. We got more to talk about. Malcolm Smith, State Senator Malcolm Smith, doesn't like Lil Wayne, and Lil Wayne doesn't like New York. I don't make this stuff up, folks. I don't make this stuff up. Okay, listen, let's groove a little. This is Keep On Looking by Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. Let's get into it. Let's groove. Pure funk, folks, pure funk. Augusta, Georgia's own Sharon Jones. She is, of course, a native New Yorker now, living in New York now, I think Far Rockaway, actually, but she's from Augusta, Georgia, definitely, definitely inspired by James Brown. And I must confess, Captain, I think I might have been cakewalking. I was doing the James Brown cakewalk with my earphones on to that Jammy Jam. So, folks, you have to understand, this is not Rihanna. I'm going to throw some hate again, Cap. I'm going to do it. I'm sorry. These are pretenders right now. Stop it. Kanye does not have anything on this woman. This is pure funk. Go to YouTube, folks. Go to YouTube. Do yourself a favor. Put in Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. Stop playing. Stop it. Come on. That's enough. I go there. I black out every once in a while, Cap. I'm sorry. I black out. I was cakewalking, and I might have hit my head as I was cakewalking to some Sharon Jones. All that funk. All right, folks. Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, the call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Listen, speaking of pretenders to the throne and throwing out the clowns, we have to throw out State Senator Malcolm Smith. We got to throw him out along with Lil Wayne. This is controversy. This is a clear example of wasted dollars, wasted human breath, wasted human brain capacity. Oh, and you know, Smith is from Hollis, Queens, so he's a local guy. But his campaign against Lil Wayne is buffoonery at the highest level. Let me see if I can find this clip. In a nutshell, when asked directly about his stay in New York to Lil Wayne said directly, "I don't like New York. I just don't like New York." And believe it or not, he's entitled to his opinion. He's entitled to his opinion, but not in the world of Malcolm Smith, State Senator Malcolm Smith. So let me play this clip and briefly, because I can't keep on doing this, folks. I can't talk about this buffoonery for too long. It gets my palpitations up. Hold on. Try to get through this. Malcolm Smith on Lil Wayne.
I'm Esteban, and we're here in Times Square, where New York State Senator Malcolm Smith is holding a press conference to demand an apology from Lil Wayne, who insulted New York City.
Let me read you a statement, one word, a couple of words that came from Lil Wayne today. And here's what he says. "I don't like New York." Flat out said that. Well, here's my response to Lil Wayne. If you don't like New York, you don't have to come to New York. You don't have to sell your products here. And perhaps we won't come to your concerts. I love this city. I've been born and raised in this city. And he should also know, anecdotally or not, he's also insulted the memory of Frank Sinatra. And he's also insulted Jay-Z, who both have made endearing songs about New York. It is my hope, and I believe, and I want to believe, that he had a lapse in mental judgment for some strange reason. And I hope that he will think about it, and perhaps Nicki Minaj, who makes her money here, who's made a lot of money for Lil Wayne, will whisper in his ear, "I think you made a mistake." I was pretty angry, quite frankly, when I first saw it. I was really taken aback. I was shocked that someone would make such a profound statement. Someone of his position and his stature. I mean, it's just, I think it's a little bit unconscionable.
So at the end of the day, what would you like to see Wayne do to make this right with New York?
I think an apology, and that's a good apology to me. I think if he's the same way he made that statement and it went viral, if he says he apologized, I'm quite sure it will go viral.
When asked for a comment, the CEO of Lil Wayne's label, YMCMB, Birdman, stands by his artist.
Well, to me, I feel personally, whatever my son say, I'm going to ride with. So if he say he don't like it, then that's just what it is. He don't like it, we don't like it. I don't like it if he don't like it. So if he said, that's law.
All right. Wow. We're in deep trouble.
Oh, boy.
This is a waste. This is a bowel movement come to reality. This whole thing, it's about nothing. Captain,
well,
do me the honors on this.
Well, maybe Mr. I'm still laughing. Listen, Lil Wayne is entitled to his opinion. You know, the state senator was probably looking for a little, you know, maybe he was looking for a little publicity. I don't know. Because just as he mentioned, he said, when Lil Wayne said what he said, it went totally viral. Maybe he's looking for his situation to go a little more viral. I don't know. I can't see. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't really make any sense in any way, shape, or form. So what? Rappers say ludicrous things all the time. Who cares? You brush it underneath the rug, you keep going. You have more serious issues to address. There's a lot of things going on here in New York than to worry about this, that you actually have to make a public statement about this. Come on. I'm still laughing.
And they eat their poo-poo. And they eat their poo-poo.
I'm still laughing.
Pooing. And this one is eating their poo-poo all over the place.
Oh, man.
You know, listen. All right, folks. I'm going to just, in a nutshell, it's like shooting ducks from in a barrel. First of all, if I can say anything reverential toward Lil Wayne. I'm no fan of Lil Wayne by any stretch of the imagination. If I can say anything reverential toward him, he is entitled not to like New York. He is entitled. I would encourage people to have their own opinions. My roommate at Hampton, who was a native Hamptonian, he said he was not a fan of New York, and I had to respect that. I didn't jump on him. I had to respect him because he had, as a child, a negative experience. I believe he was mugged as a toddler. And, you know, they're mugging toddlers in New York now. They're bringing that back. That's back in fashion, folks, actually. They're mugging toddlers again. So when he was mugged as a toddler 30-some-odd years ago, you better believe he told me, and I respected it, I understood it. You know what? I'm not too fan of it. I'm not too much of a fan of New York. And matter of fact, if I wasn't who I was, personality-wise, he probably would have continued with that thought, or at least he gave me props because I was not the stereotype of a New Yorker coming in. I was not the stereotype, but he had a bug about New York, and there was a reason behind it. So I couldn't tell him, your opinion is wrong. Shouting out Daryl B, by the way. Shouting him out from the comic shop. And on the flip side of that, we should not pay too close attention to someone like Lil Wayne's, and he says his stature. Who is this guy? We shouldn't care about his opinion. We shouldn't even care about his opinion. Why is he so important? If the president of the United States says he does not like New York after having been a student here and being the president, that would be a problem. He has to like everywhere he goes. That's a different situation. Now, a smart business person who has a skate fashion line like Lil Wayne, being that this is the fashion capital of the world, it would make business sense to hug New York very tightly. You need to have a romantic relationship with New York. I'm being facetious, of course, folks, but you know what I'm getting at. If you're trying to do business, whether it's trying to sell records, hip-hop records, since this is the hip-hop, the birthplace of hip-hop, it would make sense to love New York, to be political and say that. And if you're trying to sell clothing, a clothing line, and this is the fashion capital, it would make business sense to say that. But, hey, maybe he wants to be an honest guy. If he wants to be an honest guy, he's entitled to not like New York. For Malcolm Smith to pander like this, and we know he has mayoral intentions. That's really what's going on here. This is not the way to do it. If you're going to pander, the key to pandering is not to look like you're pandering, Malcolm. Don't look like you're pandering. Don't be obvious about it. I have no other thing. I can't do this anymore, Captain. I don't have an opinion. I don't. It's crazy. I'm really more on Lil Wayne's side in a way, and I can't stand Lil Wayne. Who cares if he doesn't like New York? New York is an acquired taste, and I love New York, but it's an acquired taste. Anything else on this, Captain, before we move
along?
Absolutely not. All right. Something else you got to bring up. This is a horror story. We have our own mini Aurora, Colorado incident Friday. I'm sure the nation is aware of this. Although it's a local story, you know, anything that happens in New York, in the middle of Manhattan, in the morning, in front of the Empire State Building, I suspect it's not really a local story. It's a horror show. My condolences go out to the victims in this thing. Let me see if I can find the clip, and then we will unpack it. You know, listen, we're going to have to get a handle on these guns, folks. We're going to have to get a handle on these gun laws. I know the NRA are probably listening, but it's getting to the point now, whether it's hysteria over the economy, some of this is fueling this, some of it may be racism. We see what happened in Wisconsin. Whatever your reasoning is, these automatic weapons must be scrutinized. The people must be scrutinized. It's becoming hellish. Anyway, this is the Wall Street Journal news on the Empire State Building shooting. Hold on.
9:03 this morning in front of 10 West 33rd Street. A disgruntled former employee of a company at that address shot and killed a former co-worker, striking him three times. As the two officers approached Johnson, he pulled his .45 caliber semi-automatic pistol from his bag and fired on the officers, who returned fire, killing him. An additional nine individuals were either wounded or grazed during the exchange, six of whom were removed to Bellevue Hospital and three to New York Presbyterian Cornell Medical Center. All are not likely to die.
That was New York Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly speaking this morning about a shooting earlier today outside the Empire State Building. We have Tamer Al-Ghabashi, who was on the scene earlier today, here with us in the studio to tell us about the latest. Tamer, thanks for being here.
All right, thanks for having me.
So I understand there was the press conference at 11 a.m. What do we now know about what unfolded this morning?
Well, what we know for certain is that this was a workplace-related shooting. Didn't have to do with the Empire State Building as much as it was near the Empire State Building, but not at the Empire State Building. It was a former employee, as we heard Commissioner Kelly mention, who was employed there for about 6 years and was laid off as part of a downsizing at this, I believe it's a women's apparel manufacturer. He allegedly ambushed one of his former coworkers as the former coworker arrived at work this morning, shot him three times in the head and killing him on the scene. At which point he started traveling east towards Fifth Avenue, where a construction worker followed him and was able to alert police on the beat to what happened. The police then confronted him. He began shooting at police, we're told, and the police returned fire. Possibly in that exchange, those nine other people were wounded, not seriously, as we're now learning.
So this wasn't, I believe we had initially heard that he might have been shooting randomly at other people. This was because of the firefight.
Yeah, it seems as though there was a firefight between him and the police officers. I believe it was two police officers that fired upon him once he started shooting. And they were able to, obviously, kill him at the scene. And we believe that no other officers were injured and that the nine people who were injured, as we heard from Commissioner Kelly, are expected to survive in our area hospitals.
And what else can we expect to hear today in terms of how this might progress? The police are still on the scene?
The police are still on the scene. I imagine they're going to be there for hours interviewing witnesses. I mean, this came at the height of rush hour at 9 a.m. when everyone's coming to work, especially in that area. There's plenty of office towers and, of course, a lot of tourists. So I think we're going to try to learn a little bit more about the victims, who they were. And, of course, we're going to try to find out more about the shooter. And I'm sure through, phone calls and various updates from police officials, we'll probably find out, what may have motivated this attack. These two men had a history, besides the fact that he was just laid off from there.
And stay with us. We're going to go to a witness account right now of someone who's there on site.
There was blood on the sidewalk, actually. I was just, I normally walk across the street like nothing, and then I see that there's blood on the corner. I saw a woman, her foot was covered in blood on the corner there. And when I was actually, I looked across, there was an ambulance, and people were taking another woman in there into the ambulance. So those are the only people that I saw actually that were taken away. That seemed to be innocent bystanders. And then I saw the man who was the shooter just laying on the ground.
Now, the mayor has said that the city is safe but not immune to this national problem of gun violence. Is this something that we can expect that discussion to continue over the next couple of days or possibly play a larger role in the presidential debates even?
It's possible. I mean, this has been one of Mayor Bloomberg's signature issues. He says he's not into gun control as much as he is into stopping the flow of illegal weapons into New York City from other states. This is anytime there's a high-profile shooting, whether it's of a police officer or a child, or in this case, police officers engaging in a gun battle in Midtown, the mayor takes the opportunity to bring it up. Whether it'll join the debate about illegal guns or just the flow of guns in the United States remains to be seen, depending on... all we know is that it was a .45 caliber weapon that he used. We don't know how he procured it, whether it was any whether he was registered to have that weapon or... perhaps if he purchased it illegally. It's still way too early to tell.
Well, thank you for joining us. We'll look for more on that here.
All right. Again, another tragedy involving a shooting, Captain. I said this behind the scenes to you that, these things are happening with more frequency. Not that I don't have a third eye open anyway. I always have a third eye. I get that from the Oracle. Shouting out the Oracle is probably listening. You have to be very keen-eyed and very honest with discernment and looking at your environment when you walk around. Not that anyone just can't get caught out there. We know that accidents happen. We know that tragedies happen every day. But, you know, this is a horror show, and it seems to be happening with more frequency. You have people that are living on the edge. We don't know if they're hopped up on any kind of drugs. I mean, this young man's, well, he's an older man, actually, Jeffrey Johnson, 58 years old. His resume comes off as if, you know, he's a hardworking guy. He gets laid off, but he is a loner. He's going to work from his apartment in Manhattan with a suit on. His neighbors see him in a suit every day, even though he's not working. So he's in a suit every day walking around. He had a suit on the day that he killed this man and had bullets, ammunition in his briefcase. So, I mean, what do you do? I mean, the young man that was killed, he was a younger man. He was, I guess, the rising star in this company. And there was some kind of bad blood between these two. It gives me even more evidence to really be very careful as to how you approach people and how you deal with people in the office. You don't know what's going on in the hearts and minds of your fellow worker. I think maybe it gives greater evidence to kind of be a little not so friendly, not so forthcoming with people, even in the workplace. I know, you know, not to be disrespectful, always keep the respect high, but telling people your personal business, you're really talking about strangers. You don't know what's going on in their heads. A year later, you know, his anger is festering. A year later, this guy, I was going to call him a gentleman. I can't do that. This guy, Johnson, comes up, kills this young man. And incidentally, the Rube Goldberg machine is in effect. He kills this man. The police go after him. Their ricochets injure 9 innocent bystanders. You know, this is hard. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think, Captain, that there really is about – I mean, this guy had no history of mental illness, no criminal record, just a hardworking loner, which is something to look at, a hardworking loner. Looks like he really didn't have any interaction with people. That's the road to sociopathy. That's the road to that, I think. What are your thoughts on this, Captain?
Well, the reality of the situation is this. All decisions come from the limbic system, meaning that all your decisions are emotional. So if you have a gun anywhere near you in any which way, whether it's legit or it's illegitimate, you get an emotional response, you pull the gun. All decisions, I repeat, are done emotional. Then you build a construct that is not emotional to explain, to rationalize the emotional decision you just made. Every decision, whether it's getting a job, whether it's talking to a girl, all of these decisions are emotional. Then we build a construct around the emotional decision to explain, to break down the emotional decision that we just made. The construct is not emotional. Now, that being said, let's talk about the Aurora, Colorado shootings via Batman. What happened after that shooting, from a statistical analysis, the Americans went out and bought more guns. And the same thing that will happen here. Now, if you want guns off the street, there's two things you have to address. You need to address the Constitution, because within the Constitution, you have the right to bear arms. That's the first thing. The second thing is you have to go after the illegal gun distributor. And who is that? That's not the black man or the Latin man that fills up the prison. That is white people at the end of the day. And I'm saying it. That is the truth. Gun shops are owned mainly by white people. People. So now you see what you have to do. You have to address the government, and then you have to address the powers that be on top of the food chain if you want their flow of their legal guns coming into your city. And I will tell you, there is a lot of legitimate guns in the United States, a lot more than you think, and there's a whole lot of illegal guns all over the place, regardless of whatever law you put up. It does not matter. People are going to bear arms unless you can get to the source. And if you do not want to get to the source, you can make the laws as crazy as you want. people will pack their artillery. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yes, we only have about 4 minutes remaining, but I will say there seems to be a common thread with these type of things. You are seeing folks, desperate people, the killers, the perps in these matters, they're desperate people, and they're getting triggers. Someone dies, someone loses a job, someone gets disrespected. There's something that's triggering these people, and it's setting them off. And I think in our wisdom, what we try to impart here at AfroNerd, it has a lot to do with being able to look at these people, not really engage them. Now, when you look into this, you know, you're getting more and more as the story unfolds, you're getting more information. Again, out of respect, you got to mention that the victim, who was shot, I believe, 3 times, as the news clip stated, 41-year-old Stephen Urkelino from Hoboken, New Jersey, was the victim. A relatively young man on his way up. They said he was a rising star in this company. And it looks like – I'm going to read this from Wikipedia now. The Wiki is, you know, sometimes their information can be a little bit haphazard, but it makes sense. It says Urkelino and Johnson had filed harassment complaints against each other, and Johnson had reportedly threatened to kill Urkelino before. There were disputes between the two due to Urkelino not promoting Johnson's T-shirt line. One incident that was reported to the police happened inside an elevator when Johnson threw his elbow at Urkelino, who responded by grabbing Johnson's throat and threatening him. In another incident, in April 2011, Johnson reportedly told Urkelino, "I'm going to kill you," while on the elevator. Despite Johnson being laid off in 2011, he visited the company on a regular basis afterwards and reportedly had confrontations with Urkelino each time. So this is bad blood. I don't know if someone who gets laid off from a company or what have you, and he keeps on going back, and he keeps on telling you, "I'm going to kill you." When someone tells you they're going to kill you repeatedly, you better believe it. Captain, any closing remarks? We're going to have to do a part two on this. There's a lot more we didn't get into. Morris Brown College is in trouble. Apple versus Samsung. We have to talk about that. LeBron James and his sneaker line. There's stuff we didn't get to. But what are your thoughts with the 2 minutes remaining?
We will see more of this type of thing happening across America. That's my final thoughts.
Yeah, I have to concur with you on that, Captain. I think that this is just the beginning. You heard the news clip. Does this tie in with the national election? You know, this is not just a local thing. We're hearing too many of these incidents, and they appear to be connected to desperation. People are desperate. Jobs are being lost. And it's a shame, but I don't know. All right, folks, it's been an absolute pleasure. We'll do it again on Wednesday for our midweek review show. Stay tuned. It's been real. It's been a pleasure, as I said. In homage to Morris Brown College, who's having financial problems, foreclosure is imminent. The legendary HBCU. This is Morris Brown by Outkast. See you on Wednesday.
You like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, bang, bang.
Brand new Cadillac, being nice to be.
Sharp as a tack, like I just left church. Clean. Walked in attack when the shit won't work me. Everybody wanna know what's really going on. Is you on through down, still making songs, so on and so on. I can go on and on and on and on and on. Hell yeah.
Music makes the world go round, where it goes, where it goes. Don't go. It's just so hard.
No
doughboys in the Cadillac seal. Cast with a crown on your Cadillac seal. I make your wheels of steel stand like your DJ got killed. A fire marshal.
Set it down.
Time to go. Outcast royalty by design of logo. Wanna count it out loud?
93, 94, 95, 96.
Plus a dime, feel that fire. Hot like the perm on the back of your neck. Left it in too long. Now you got cabbage patch. Silky. Bend the corners like a crowbar, oh so unique. Got the pedal to the floor, but the photo just creep. Exotic melodic melody, yep, we got it funky for the funk of it. And everybody want it. You make a nigga put a dog on it.
You make a nigga put a dog on it.
Music makes the world go round.
Let a pretty one pass you by without saying hi. I'm so gone over you, and yes, it's true.